You're listening to Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott.
And I'm Dennis O'Hare. One would have a very hard time putting together what you might call a short list of the major events in the life of Julian Bond, civil rights leader, co-founder of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, often known as SNCC, Atlanta State Representative and State Senator, first African-American to be placed in nomination for consideration for a major party vice presidential candidacy, NAACP chairman, and that's just for starters. Julian Bond died over the weekend at age 75. Tyrone Brooks is a civil rights leader and former Atlanta State Representative. He joins us now. Mr. Brooks, welcome back.
Good to be back with you, Dennis.
Listen, you started in the legislature back in 1981, and that's a long time of service. But by then, Julian Bond had been there 14 years, and many folks recall he had to get the courts to seat him in 1967. The legislature didn't want to let him in because he opposed the Vietnam War, even though he'd been elected. So by the time you got there, how had things changed in those 14 years, and how much did he have to do with that?
Well, they hadn't changed very much, and I must say that Julian Bond supported me when I ran in 1980. I only ran for the legislature because two great civil rights leaders, Reverend Dr. Ralph David Abernathy, who was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s best friend in the world, and Reverend Joe Boone, who had been part of Dr. King's Operation Breadbasket, they decided to run me for the Georgia House. And Julian Bond lived in my House district, by the way, at that time. We shared districts. Julian Bond supported me. He was one of the few that supported me. Julian Bond, Bob Holmes, Jose Williams, Senator Horace Tate, they supported me. But by the time I got there, I was elected in 1980 and then 81, I noticed that, you know, as Dr. Lowry would say all the time, he says that now everything has changed, nothing has changed. So Julian Bond had gone to the Senate, and I began to talk to Julian about his role in the House. How was it after he won that unanimous decision from the United States Supreme Court that gave him his seat? And he said, Tyrone, we have more people in, but it's basically the same. So we worked together for about 6 years before he ran for Congress, and of course John Lewis won that seat. But it was a pleasure serving with Julian. We shared districts. He carried a lot of the legislation that I was able to get out of the House over to the Senate. He and Culver Kidd, by the way, would team up.
From Milledgeville.
Yeah, from Millersville, Georgia. They would team up and carry my legislation because Lieutenant Governor Zell Miller would always tell me, Culver is going to handle your bill. So when I got a bill to the Senate, Culver would always grab Julian, and Julian and Culver would carry whatever. The 1983 anti-terrorism law was one of the first major pieces of legislation that I was able to get out of the House over to the Senate. And the reason I carried it was because Ms. John Dale Johnson was executive director of the Atlanta branch of the NAACP. So she came to me first, and she said, I want you to sponsor this legislation. She said, when it gets to the Senate, you know, Julia will help you. We passed the bill. Governor Joe Frank Harris signed it into law in 1983. So Julian Bond was very instrumental in helping me in so many ways. He also encouraged me to take on the flag bill, because when the flag bill was introduced by Vernon Jones and Frank Redding in 81, Julian said, well, we need somebody from the civil rights movement to take this forward. So he began to say to the Black Caucus members, we need Tyrone to do that in the House because he knows how to do it. He's got the contacts around the state. So I said, Julian, if we get it to the Senate, you have to care. He said, I'll be gone from the Senate by the time that bill passes, Tyrone. He said, it may not ever pass. But he gave us great encouragement, great advice. He opened up a lot of doors with NAACP branches around the state, so that we would have farms around the state over 20 years to pass the Georgia bill. House Bill 16, it eventually passed, and Governor Roy Boone signed it in 2001.
That was almost, that was more than
20. Was very, very helpful to me in so many ways as a lawmaker, but also giving me inspiration to work in the civil rights movement was the most important thing he did. Because when I first met him, I was with Jose Williams at a meeting at the Old Pascals. I had just come in the SCLC, and I had been reading about Julian Bond and many others in SNCC. And Jose introduced me to Julian, and he said, this is my boy. I raised this boy from Warrenton, Georgia, Julian, and I want you to share with him all of your experiences in SNCC. And so we began to talk, and I began to use Julian in a lot of the activities that I had to conduct around the state, including the Moores Ford Bridge lynching case that we're still working on right now.
And Mr. Brooks, we've been hearing, and obviously, and for me, and growing up and learning about Julian Bond and his significance also because of his youth and what some would call his charisma. He was critical in drawing young people to the movement. Can you reflect a little bit about how important that was? Because he is sort of considered the baby of the civil rights giants.
You're absolutely right. He was a baby of the civil rights giants. So was John Lewis, about the same age. I think Julian understood the importance of talking to young people and sharing with young people, high school students, college students, as to the importance of understanding this, that when you join the movement, you have got to be committed to a cause and not just a moment. And he also said, I would hear him say a lot of times, this Andrew Young always reminds me, and Andy did it last week over the Week Street Baptist Church. Andy said, you know, when you joined the movement, we taught you all, you can't do this work if you're afraid to die. So Julian would say that, and he would say to young people, you have got to find a reason to doing what you're doing. It just can't be a moment. It just can't be a news conference. It can't just be a show for the media. You've got to be consistent, and you've got to be persistent. So he was very able to do that because he was so youthful. His looks were still youthful for a long time. And you know, I saw Julian 2 years ago at Howard University. He had just came over from Georgetown with Dick Gregory. And the first thing he said to me was, Tyrone, I may not be down there in the trenches with you, but I'm reading about you. I'm following you. He said, I know what you're doing over in Monroe, Georgia, at the Morris Ford Grierson lynching case. And he said, don't forget, that was Roy Wilkins and Walter White and many other leaders before SCLC took it on. I said, I know that, Julian. So Julian was very connected. He was very much aware of what was happening in the whole world. Even though he wasn't with you every day, he really knew what you were doing. He followed you.
I want to play a clip here in an interview with our own Kate Sweeney. Julian Bond talked about the importance of SNCC and during a lot of sit-ins as well.
This kind of nonviolent protest has the great benefit of giving a weapon to people who previously were not thought to be active participants in this movement.
Julian Bond went to Morehouse College and was another leader in the student group.
Up till then, it was thought if you wanted to fight against segregation, you had to be a lawyer like Thurgood Marshall. Or you had to be a minister with great oratorical gifts like Martin Luther King. All of a sudden, ordinary people, college students, or even people who'd never even been to college, everybody can sit down.
And so Mr. Brooks, in that clip there, I think it's sort of, it's evident that to how he was trying to bring everybody together from different walks of life within the African-American community. When you look back on his, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You finish.
When you look back on how he was able to do that, are you hopeful that this spirit, this type of mobilizing and strategy will continue?
I am. I am very hopeful. I meet with a lot of the young students in the Black Lives Matter movement. They call me quite often. They say to me, look, we know your record. We know you grew up in the movement as a child. We know Jose Williams was your mentor. Dr. King was your leader. And they said, how can we be like King? How can we be like Jose Williams? How can we be like Ralph Abernathy? And I say to them, you have got to determine what your purpose is in this movement. You have to be able to say, this is what we want to do. This is how we're going to do it. And this is the way we're going to do it. But you've got to be committed. You can't play around with it. So I think what we've got to do now, those of us who are still living, we've got to continue to impress upon those who want to be leaders in the movement, the Black Lives Movement, Hands Up, Don't Shoot, whatever the movement may be, that you have got to be persistent, you've got to be committed, and you've got to be, and in the words of Andrew Young, you have got to be prepared to die. I think Julian Bond was trying to do that throughout his whole life and his career. He did it effectively. But Julian has something unique. He came from a family of educators, of course. He came from a family that really believed in education, and Julian also had the ability to write and to speak in a way in which you could clearly see the brilliance in him and the commitment in him. He was not the one on the front lines going to jail every day, but he was the one communicating the message to the media to make sure that the world knew what the movement was about and where the battles were being fought. He was very smooth. He was very articulate. And he could go from the white community to the Black community and feel very comfortable in doing that. And he could go into the academia world and then come back to Auburn Avenue and the old Hunter Street and Buttermilk Bottom and talk to folks on the ground in the ghettos and the barrios, Julian Baum was very unique. And the other thing I just told another reporter was, when he ran for Congress in 1986, John Lewis ran, but for the media smearing him over false accusations about drug use, Julian Baum would have won that seat. But I think it was a blessing in disguise that Julian Baum ended up being the national board chair of the NAACP, because I thought that was a greater role for Julian Baum than going to the United States Congress.
Funny you should mention that campaign, because Congressman Lewis, in his statement following the passing of Julian Baum, calls that a difficult period when they were running against each other, two old collaborators in SCLC, two old friends. That was a bitter campaign, and I recall it personally because I moderated a debate between the two of them at City Hall in 1986. The tension between them, they were not speaking at that point. And Congressman Lewis, John Lewis, city councilman, raised the issue of the drug use, I think, of the allegations. And there was the question of whether Julian Baum would take a drug test or not. He was the favorite going into that campaign. And then John Lewis won and has held the seat since. So
that's correct.
They
that's
restored
correct.
Their friendship, though, years later. How was Julian Baum able to do that, do you think? Did he ever talk about that to you?
He did. Julian was personally hurt. I have to confess, I voted for Julian in that race. I thought Julian was the better candidate in the race, and I thought the media, particularly the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, there was two papers then, they were not combined. I mean, it was like early in the morning, they were beating up on Julian. In the afternoon, when the Atlanta Journal, the late edition, came out, they were beating up on Julian. I think they feared that if Julian went to Congress, he would be a much more outspoken, very much independent voice, unbought and unbossed, in the words of Shirley Franklin. Julian told me one day at Pascal's after that election, he said, "Tyrone, I never thought that John would do that to me." And he was referring to the so-called drug test that Julian refused to take. You remember, Julian would not take the test.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Julian said to me, he said, "That was below the belt." He said, "I never thought that he would stoop so low to do that to me, Tyrone, just to win a seat." And I said, "Julian, there's a greater prize for you. One day you're going to realize it." I had no idea, of course, that he would ever become the national board chair of the NAACP. But it took Julian and John a long time to get over that. And I don't know if they ever got over it. I think John said yesterday in one of his tweets that they did make up, but I really don't believe they fully made up for that campaign of 1986. I think Julian was forever hurt by it. He felt like, you know, a good friend of his from SNCC had stooped very low, hit him below the belt, to use something that the media was fanning in the flames. I mean, every day, you know, it was about, well, he did use cocaine, and nobody ever had any proof that Julian used any cocaine. No drugs were ever found on Julian Baum. He was never arrested for drug use. But that was just something that was swirling out there, and it got picked up, and Julian felt like John used it unfairly. You know, John did win the seat. But I told Julian, I said, "Don't worry, you'll get over it and you'll find a greater prize." And that prize became the national board chair of the NAACP, which is far greater than serving in any political office.
And Mr. Brooks, we've got about a minute left. As you reflect on the passing of your friend Julian Baum, what do you want people to know about him that maybe they don't?
I want them to know that he was very humble. He was very quiet. He was an introvert. And some people took that for arrogance. Some people said he was, in the old slang that my grandmama would use, uppity. He was not that. Julian was just a loner. He was a thinker. He was always thinking. He was always writing in his mind, and sometimes he was able to put that on paper. But he was very much aware of what was going on. As he told me at Howard University 2 years ago with Dick Gregory, he said, "I know what you're doing in Monroe, Georgia, around the Moores Ford Bridge lynching." I said, "Well, you need to come and speak there." And he said, "Well, I plan on it one day." He never had a chance to do that. Julian Baum was very much connected. He was very much real. He was on the ground. He was committed. He just had his own way of doing things. And some people did not understand him. So don't ever assume that just because someone is very quiet and they are alone, I'm alone. I'm alone in myself. And don't assume that they're aloof. Don't assume that they're arrogant. just try to get to know them. But Julian Brown was one of the most committed freedom fighters that I've ever known in my lifetime.
All right. Tyrone Brooks is a civil rights leader and former Atlanta State representative reflecting on the passing of Julian Bond. Mr. Brooks, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you all so very much, and God bless you.
Thank you.